Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Get a gun.
Hello, welcome to Slamfire Radio. This is episode 551 for April 17th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Adriel.
Dave.
Oh, is that me?
I'm scrolling. Hold on. No, I was on the wrong page. Hi, everybody. I'm Random Dave.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Kelly.
It's Kelly. It's your turn. Okay, Mike, no, you. It's you. No one can hear what I'm saying, right?
No.
Getting cut out.
No, we're good.
I'm Mike.
And then we also have Mike.
Yeah. Not from Canmore.
Hello. Not from Canmore. Yeah,
you know what? Allegedly.
Close enough. On the internet, no one knows you're from Canmore.
No, the Council of Mikes takes great issue with claiming you're Mike from Canmore.
Oh, but it's like
Fight Club.
Stolen Valor. Yeah. Stolen Mike Valor.
Yep.
No, there is actually people who are named Mike that live in Canmore.
There's got to be one.
What? Are they the right one?
That's bullshit. I'm looking that up right now. Like, nobody's going to admit that because the RCMP would be at their house already.
They're Michaels.
Yeah, they get blamed for everything. Yeah. So they're... No way.
Anywho, why don't we get into what we did in guns. El Jefe, do you want to start off?
Sure. Pretty busy the last couple of weeks with baseball. Like last week, every night of the week, baseball practice or baseball. So not guns, but kept me away from doing gun stuff. But I actually have done a little bit of stuff. For work, I actually started listening to an audiobook called With Winning in Mind. And of course, it's on the bookshelf, but really good. Highly recommend the author, Olympic champion, and just going over the mentality of shooting and, well, with winning in mind. Really good audiobook. And so I ended up buying the book. So.
I think Trevor pushed that one pretty hard.
Yeah. It was really good. Really easy listen. Like, the author actually narrated it, which I find tend to be the best audiobooks because...
Sharing, and I don't have my audio down.
sharing is caring, Kelly.
Yeah. Sharing is caring.
Yeah, I can't stand to hear myself, so.
But you sound so great. Come on.
But yeah, so recommend that book, and I will keep... Well, I bought the book so I can read it and flip back to it because, yeah, there was some really good stuff in there, I think. I've talked about him before. Basically, he's my buddy that comes down here and shoots. But Craig and I got nerding out one day because we're talking about leaving barrels with Briley to get rear sights put on and everything. And the discussion on barrel length came up and whether an extra, well, I got 24 inches of barrel length really makes that big of a difference. So
absolutely, 4 inches makes a huge difference. I'm sorry, I have to make
on certain things. Yes, I agree. Absolutely.
All right. Continue.
But yeah, so we actually come up with some interesting data. Like basically, there's a 2 ounce difference between the 24 and 28 inch barrel. So
how is it that little?
I have no idea. The profile looks the same. Like there's not a massive difference in profiles. So I have no idea how it's only 2 ounces, but yeah, it's only 2 ounces. The difference between, and we even went as far as weighing chokes. So I weighed a cylinder bore choke and a full choke. Oh yeah. And all those weights were pulled, chokes were pulled out of the barrels and that. But there was, what was it? Like just over a quarter, maybe 3/8 of an ounce difference between a cylinder bore choke and a full choke. And so now I'm going to bring my scale out to Texas, which I've been prepping for. And he has the extended Briley choke. So we're going to actually go weigh those chokes and put everything into a spreadsheet, probably try and find like a 21 inch barrel, an 18 and a half inch M2 barrel, check them out, or get someone to, if someone has it and they can weigh it for me, cool. But, and then, yeah, I'll get more data because that just spurred into now, okay, does the extra 4 inches make a difference on accuracy, both with birdshot, buckshot, and slugs? So sometime coming up here, I will do that. So yeah, we nerded out a little bit there. And yeah, as I mentioned, prep for Texas. I'm leaving tonight because I got to be in Austin by 10:30 tomorrow morning to pick Craig up from the airport. So yeah, I'm loading up tonight, heading to Texas for Texas 3-Gun Championship. Been seeing some stages being released, like stage walkthroughs, and there's some really fun stages. Like there's one that's like a 2-bay burner rifle shotgun stage that is going to be really fun. And yeah, and then some it's going to be partially open terrain, and looks like, yeah, they are still doing some bays. So yeah, it'll be a fun match, fun weekend. Yeah, I'll have more on that next week. My hunting draw results came out today. So I get to hunt for a grand total of 4 days this fall.
Sorry, so you enter a draw to see how many days you can hunt for?
No, you enter a draw, a lottery draw at that. No points or anything. A lottery draw to see if you get a tag.
Oh.
And so I didn't get my elk, but I did draw a deer tag. Then that's a 4-day season.
Oh.
So from like November 9th to 13th, I will be hunting deer.
Cool.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Out of all the tags, there was like 260,000 applicants statewide, and then they issued 61,000 tags in total over everything. So, looking, deer was my higher probability of drawing. Elk was, really, really low probability of drawing. Like it was like down to like 1-2% probability, but the deer on some of them, and I got my third choice, so I almost didn't even get deer, but that was up to like 20-25% when I was applying. But
is that for gun, or is that all
So the elk, I figured best chance was archery. So for the elk, I put in for archery, but then the deer, I put anything. So I can go out bow hunt, I can go out rifle hunt, which I will go out and rifle hunt for that. And it's a forked antler, so a buck. Tony's asking, any reason why it's so short? Nope, no idea. Just, I guess, conservation and how many people, I have no idea why it's so short, but yeah. Fine looking, like even all the states, like you hear them talk like, oh, like your week long hunt, and that like they don't get to hunt for months for most things. And like a lot of the over counter stuff from what I see is ending. Like there is Barbary sheep, there is turkey in certain units. Even like the turkey season, the spring turkey season, we're almost halfway through it. We got a month for spring turkey, and we've just been too busy to even think about going out and trying for any turkey. So, but yeah. So that's what I'll be doing in November. Well, for 4 days in November. Might actually have my AK-style gun here soon. Buddy messaged me wanting to sell me a Sega 308. I can kind of... Oh. Cool. Considering, he's asking a grand for it. I guess he's got a bunch of parts and that, but it's been rattle canned, so I'm thinking about it. And well, I said we were talking about throwing guns, so
I see your legs. That's not a gun.
Carbon fiber, well, it's fancy.
Like 90 degrees here today, so it's shorts weather. Yeah, that's a Briley extension tube. But what I wanted to show was the receiver. So this is a Roth receiver. Roth Performance Shop. It comes already ported, although looking at the port, I still want to open it up more. But it is really good. I mean, Mark Roth, he's one of the OGs when it comes to doing shotguns. So got that together for the most part, except for apparently one of my shell catch springs decided to leave during the move. So Craig is bringing down one of his because, yeah, I don't have. But something interesting with it, you know, some people who've worked on these will know, like, you got your pin for your shell latch. On the Roth receiver, it's actually a screw, which is really nice. So you just put an Allen key in there and thread it out, and it's a lot better than having to grab a punch and drive out that pin.
Cool.
Yeah, Craig will be running that this weekend, and yeah.
How many rounds in that tube?
That'd be 12 rounds. Yeah.
I miss freedom.
Yeah, but we can only start with 8 in the tube. Actually, he won't even be able to run that tube because he's shooting limited in this match. He can only have an 8-round tube. So he's bringing down another extension tube to put on there because, yeah, he can't use that. But that's it's the same extension that I use on my M2.
Nice.
So it works really good. And, yeah, probably going to be sending Briley a barrel. Well, they're going to be at the match, so I might give them one of my barrels to machine and put a rear sight on for me. But yeah, that's pretty much it for me. Kelly, what have you been up to?
I'm preparing to go down to the US this weekend. Yay. It's Kate's day's shoot, so Cracky and I are going to be going down, not together. We're driving separately. However, that being said, we will be going down. I may or may not be shooting on Friday. That means I am. All the cool guns that they have down in the US, just like Kyle has. But unfortunately, the ATF are a pain in my tuchus right now, and they keep sending my Form 6 back. And I keep telling them that the manufacturer for Aguila is the address I provided for them. What? Anyway, yeah, right? So Deborah is not my friend right now.
If you're listening, Deborah.
Right. So
they don't like the address given for one of your ammunition manufacturers.
That is correct. Also, Ely. I've also listed Ely as well. And they said, no, you need to provide the manufacturers. I said, that is where they are met. The ammunition is manufactured there. It's the brand and also where they're being manufactured. They're going, please provide the manufacturing address.
Mine, I literally put for Cellier and Bellet. I put Czech Republic. Boom, done.
Who did you get? Maybe I should send it to them.
I don't know. It was great.
Searched up the company online, put that address in. I've never had it returned.
Deborah's a bitch. Let me tell you that.
Now I got to go through emails and see who I've been dealing with.
Okay. Anyways, so it looks like I'm not going to be able to bring anything down because they won't approve it. I'm leaving tomorrow morning first thing. So it is what it is. I just messaged our friends down in the U.S. and said I'm not bringing out a couple of other things that I've been doing recently. So we have a couple of Ontario events up on Maple Seed. I'm going to be doing putting together a couple more event brights for the other shoot bosses. Yeah, they owe me. And I'll do that tonight and send that out. And what else? Oh, I was at the range this past weekend. We had orientation for our new members at FRPC, was able to do that with them. I was stationed on the rifle range and got to put through about 24 new members at FRPC, which is fantastic. Awesome. Lots of people joining, which means that maybe the wait list will open up soon. And I also chatted with my papa. It looks like I'm going to be doing a Club of ATT. Yes, we still do those. Because people are still coming to the range and joining the range, and they have firearms, pistols, so which is a good thing. So we're going to be doing that. It looks like we're going to be doing that on June 2nd. Yes, June 2nd. So I'm going to do that, but I just was chatting with my dad last night, and he says, hey, would you like to go to the range with me? I need to sight in the new Seiko that he got. He won that. Yeah. Anyways, he won a brand new rifle, a nice little one. It's 6.5 Creedmoor. And nice. I said, well, are you rich? And he says, no. I said, well, why'd you get that? And he says, well, it needs a different caliber. I said, okay.
6.5 is the same price these days.
I know. Yeah. But we're going to go to the range on the second, right after we do the A Club Level ATT. And he's going to, I'm going to take him and he's going to sight in his brand new rifle on the rifle range. He's super excited to do that with me. What else? Yeah, that's it. We got some exciting news happening or some exciting things happening with Project Maple Seed. Dave may want to talk about that. I'm not sure if he does or not. Anyways. What ifs.
So for the listeners, Richard asks, does anyone in down in the US have a Winchester Wildcat? You can borrow Kelly.
Jesus I'll go Christ. Hide now. Well, Stacy did just message me back and she said that we do have loaners. Yeah, I need to get ammo too. I'll just go to the gun store there. I know them. Yep. We can get ammo and guns and we'll have a fantastic day. I think that's about it. Yeah, I've been to the range, volunteered to do a couple of things. Range days, National Range Days on June 1st. Don't forget about that as well. I am going up to our nation's capital. I'm going to be going up to Ottawa to do it because we got bouncy castles and cotton candy. So, and yeah.
Is the location downtown?
No.
No?
It's not.
Sure. Bouncy castles are.
Yeah, that's usually when the truckers strike, though, or hot the tubs. Truckers blockade. The hot tubs. No, I wish they would have a hot tub. No, it's out at EOSE, which is out near Umbrum. So it's a little further from Ottawa. But again, we have bouncy castles. So it's going to be fun. That's it.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm supposed to say who's next. Adriel. Yeah.
That's a thing we do. You pass it on to the next person. That's been 2 weeks. I completed a PAL course. Next one's coming up on the 20th, which is this weekend. I am into the part of the season where every weekend is something gun related. I started 3 weeks ago. Yeah, I'm there. I will emerge in September, I think. hopefully still married. And yeah.
You say that every year.
I do, but I it's just because I can't believe I get away with so much. That's really why I say it every year.
She's a good woman.
Yeah. Yeah, completed that PAL course. Went well. Had a beer with Tony. That was a week or so ago. He was in my neck of the woods. So yeah, we're just like,
hey, Tony.
Have a beer. Mm-hmm. I reloaded some 9mm and 300 blackout. And I was like, the cases were kind of crappy looking. And I was like, I got the buffing wheel right there. What if I just put them on there? So I hit them with the buffing wheel. They're very shiny. Very shiny.
Nice. You individually buff each one.
Yeah. It took way too long. But like running them through the dry tumbler, like they came out clean. They didn't come out shining and like glistening like they did after the buffer.
You just need one for each mag that's all shiny. The rest of them can look like crap.
Yeah, just the top one, right? The rest of them are just total scum. Went and shot up some gophers. First ones of the year. Just kind of nice. The grass is crispy. It was dry. And there are grass fires galore that are going to be happening this spring.
We're getting a bunch in Ontario. We already started about a month ago.
Yeah. Yeah. We're there. But yeah, got some gophers. Shot my buddy's. He's got like a gray birch takedown setup. It was quite nice. And shot that. And while I was there, I picked up a PAL course gun. I thought this is going to be like an Enfield 303. It is, but it's of the P14 variety. Yeah, so this is for the people out there who don't know. The P14 is a Mauser style 303 British. So it's got the two lug. It's got all that kind of stuff going on. The thing I like about it that I didn't know beforehand is that disabling it for PAL and that kind of thing is like super duper easy. You just pull the firing pin over. Whoop. Let's try that again. Pull the firing pin up and over and then just unscrew this part here. And that just kind of takes out your firing pin and spring. And you don't need that part. You just there. Because the safety's on the gun. So you still have a manual safety that you can use. Now it's still going to cycle ammunition. And there's your safety. Bolt locked, safety off. So this isn't a concern for most people, but it is for me because being able to quickly disable a gun and have it ready for a PAL course is kind of nice. Not that I'm going to be using that thing for anything else, but if I wanted to, if I wanted to sell it or something like that, got out of PAL instructing, I could just put this doohickey back in there and it's good to go. Someone else can use it, right?
Neat.
Organized my AR parts. They were kind of, I had them in baggies in a bin and it wasn't very well organized. So I put them in one of those like fishing tackle clear Plano boxes that has all the little dividers in it. So now it's all super well organized. And I needed to do that because I built my Raven, with some of the parts in there. Yeah. Yeah. So the gold kit came in. A couple of quick notes about it. So, yeah, it's empty. I went with the gold kit because I thought I could. I thought it doesn't come with a bolt hold open, but I heard you can mod one. And I love modding stuff with Dremels and that kind of thing. So I did that. A buddy of mine, Taylor, said, go with the platinum. But he said that after I already ordered the gold one. I tried to email him and ask to get it upgraded, and I couldn't. They don't allow that. So, beggars can't be choosers, and it came. A couple of interesting things about it. The mag release is, let me get some extra light going here. The mag release is just a standard AR mag release, but like screwed way out.
Oh, wow.
So that it's proud a little bit because it's really meant for that extended control here. It's still usable. It's just not great. I may end up grinding away this metal here so that it's easier to get to this button and it's not quite so up and away from the gun. The bolt release, you have to mod that as well. And you can see there, I had to chop it down a bit to get it to kind of fit under that shelf so that it could fit in there. Otherwise it wouldn't work, but it does work. Now I can pull it back and hold it, or you can hit the ping pong paddle and off it goes. And I just have side charging for now. I don't know if I'll get the rear charging option. If you get it from them, it's super expensive and not great. I think it's like $130 or something like that. And it uses spring clips instead of a latch. You can get a DPMS one and mod it, like a very specific one. It's got the right length, and then you just have to Dremel a couple of things. Or I'll just run the side charger. This is like a lot of the guys, I'm on a Facebook group of builders of these things. A lot of guys are building them to be like super nice rifles that like don't scratch or anything like that. And I am going to scratch the fuck out of this thing because it's going to be used for three gun. It's going to be used and abused. So I don't really worry about that stuff. I worry more about like basic functionality. I've got my Gucci AR barrel on there. I'm going to make this thing restricted because I don't care. If I'm going to go to the range for three gun, I'm bringing restricted guns anyways. Who cares? So yeah. Lock up the case, put a couple trigger locks on there. Who cares? This barrel cost me, I think, $400 when I bought it. And that's what they're going for right now. It's a Rainier Arms match or ultra match barrel. Can't remember. But yeah, they're like a $400 barrel. They're still a $400 barrel. It was really accurate for me when I got it. So I'm going to keep using it. I don't know. And then, yeah, I threw stock on it, threw a grip on. I don't particularly care about these things too much. I am not going to be sticking with this scope. I'm going to be pulling this off and putting a red dot on there because I compete in limited and I don't want to move to TAC Ops. Just got like a standard 90 degree AR safety on there for now, which again, I don't particularly care to upgrade that. And I've got a Trigger Tech AR Duty, 3.5 pound trigger in there, which is nice and light and, you know, low travel and all that kind of stuff. So that should do the trick. I'm pretty happy with it. I'm like, yeah, it took a long time to get here. The upper and the lower, like the fit was pretty stiff because of the Cerakote finishes. But as they wear together, they're starting to become easier to put back together and that kind of thing. Buddy of mine who we had on the show a couple weeks ago, he gave me some of his extended takedown pins. And these make it a lot easier. So there's a pin right there. Just pull it out. It's just got a couple of like wire clips on there. And then you can break it open just like an AR, which is nice because every once in a while you get a jam that's catastrophic and you need to do that kind of thing with an AR, right? Dave, am I selling you this on this set?
I do need the gas system.
Look at the gas. Let's use my fancy fore end.
Oh, is it actually direct impingement?
It is direct impingement. That is a gas tube you see right there.
Oh, shit.
My gas tube, my barrel, like all this is from my AR for the guts of it, the trigger, a lot of the lower parts kit, the bolt is from this. So my known good configuration, this barrel and that bolt, I know get about one MOA with good ammo. And then with like crap ammo, like a 1.5 kind of a thing, right? The BCG is theirs. The firing pin's theirs. And a couple of other like little nonsense things. The mag release it came with was theirs as well. But I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, looks good. As far as the side charge versus top charge, I definitely, if I could have side charge on an AR, 100%. Competition on that
charge, that's awesome.
Yeah
I did try putting on my bad lever, but it needed to go like further back. I may make that work though. I have JB Weld, I have a MIG welder, nothing is impossible.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe welding on aluminum is impossible, but we'll find
it. No, it's not impossible.
No, you just need the proper equipment. The MIG,
heck, even that just part you could probably braise that part because it's not a high strain part.
Yeah, maybe.
Just a torch and a coat hanger. That's all you need. You can weld it.
Yeah. a coat hanger and a dream. Yeah. No, it's looking pretty good. So now I got to wait because I opted to go restricted. So now I've got some stuff over to the verifier to. They actually have to make a new entry in the FRT for that rifle because there isn't a Raven with a 16-inch barrel.
Nobody's made it restricted.
No one's dumb enough to do that, right? Everyone's like, oh, if you're going to go restricted, go really short. If you're going to go 16-inch, why don't you go 18.5, right? I didn't want
to.
I
want
to. What a stupid country to be alive in.
Yeah, I agree. Anyways, yeah, so I built that. I do have an article on huntinggearguy.com with some build notes on parts required. There's a couple specialty parts that you may need depending on what you have in your AR. So I took note of those and kind of put them all in there. I just, as the show was starting here, bought a Sig Romeo 5X for it. That's the Sig Romeo 5, but it takes AAA batteries instead of 2032s. Mm. It puts them in the base underneath the sight, which that works for me because I don't like for the riser. I don't care. It's always going to be on high. I don't need the option to go low on it. I already have low. Red dots are out here. It's got shake awake. It's got 50,000 hours of lifetime. So I'm going to leave it on the gun and just never turn it off and then just pick it up and use it. And then once a year, I'll change batteries out. That's it. Just nice. To keep it nice and simple. This weekend coming up, I have a PAL course on Saturday. The weekend after, Maple Seed doubleheader. The weekend after that, Chaz three gun match. It has begun. It has begun. Yeah. How's the mini chop saw working for cutting grass? Yeah, still using it. Nope, I haven't moved on to normal methods. That thing cuts. So I've been using it for making 300 blackout, right? And I think I made about 200 cases. And I'm not going to need to make like 1,000. I think 200 is about all I need for this thing. Because again, I'm going to be shooting that gun. It's straight pull. I'm not going to be running through a ton of ammo with it. I'm not going to use it for competition. I'm going to be using it for hunting. Close range, blast the deer in the face hunting. So I should be fine.
You know, you can just buy brass.
Or I have 3,000 223 brass in my workshop, and I have an Amazon mini chop saw, and it just goes meep, meep, just cuts right through them like butter.
I guess if you got time. Why are you doing this? Why are your children not doing that? I thought that's
my God. They're going to have no fingers left by the time they're done. You're going to put them on a mini chop saw with a case in there and you got to hold it? It's a cute little chop saw, but it'll take your finger off.
How old are these kids now? They're old enough.
old enough to lose a finger?
They'll learn.
Yeah, they'll learn quick.
Right?
They will, well, yeah.
I mean, you've got 10 chances.
Yeah, the opportunity to learn 10 times.
I think I get some patience for all the events I do on the weekends. I don't think I'd get any patience from the significant other for chopping my children's fingers off.
No, one of the guys at work had his kids running the log splitter and something went wrong. So I don't think he's heard the end of that. And that was last fall. Nothing was severed, luckily, but things were.
Oh, yeah.
His wife was unamused.
5, 10, 20 years later, she's still going to be talking about that time you cut the kid's fingers off.
Yeah.
Never hear the end of it. Jeez.
Yeah. Mike, do you want to go next?
I guess I can go. What did I do? Well, I got my 6mm Creedmoor, getting some load development done on it. Got it out to 1100, so I'm happy-ish with that. Took the Voodoo out the other day, got it out to 530.
That's good.
Five, nice. 530 yards on about a 12-inch plate, so I was happy to do that. And that was about it, really. I've been getting busy with work and trying to figure out the match schedules that are coming up, because once you start hitting that May, July, there's basically no weekends left.
Nope.
So I'm like timing like, okay, so I do this match, and then I'm going to take my optic off of this rifle and put it on this rifle, and then load development for that rifle. So I go put it on this rifle and shoot this match.
Why are you taking it off? Why don't you just buy another optic that's the exact same?
Because I already have two, but they're on other rifles already.
So it sounds like you need more.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to have to pony up and get a couple more, because it's also time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a Rival 10 yet. I'll have to pick one of those up.
Hmm. Cool. And what's a Rival 10?
The Apex Rival 10. So the guys that love mils were saying that I don't need 15 mils per rev. 10 is good, because that's all we use. So now there's a 10 mil or a 10 rev version. Mm-hmm. Same great quality, just less numbers to worry about. Because that's what everyone's worried about with mils, is math is super.
Math is hard.
The math is easier on mils. So,
I just started using mil a little bit, and it has been actually incredibly easy. I found.
I thought it was it made it easier for like counting. Like, you don't have to take your shoes and socks off, so you can count how many mils you need to turn it right.
Well, it's base 10, but at the same time, growing up, I can tell you if a target's 26 inches, but I don't know if it's 3.2 millimeters. I can't see in metric. I see in imperial.
I'm the same, and I accidentally bought a couple mil scopes. So I'm just saying that 3 clicks is a mil, and I'm probably good. 3 clicks is an MOA, and you're kind of good in the ranges I shoot, the accuracy I get. It really doesn't matter.
It's fine. What scope are you using that 3 clicks is a mil?
Three clicks is an MOA, roughly, is what I was told.
So. Oh, okay.
It's not that accurate, though. Like, if you do that for a lot of clicks, it's not going to work very good.
I don't shoot very far anyway right now, so
yeah.
I think I'm okay. And my one gun I shoot long range with is MOA. So
yeah, cool.
Math is hard.
What else you got going, Mike?
That's pretty much it. It's been a short list.
Cool.
What about you, Dave? I'm not that exciting.
I was out at was I on after we did the Toronto Sportsman Show? I can't remember. I was down at the Toronto Sportsman Show. I don't think so. It's been a while. With the ORA at their booth, I talked to a ridiculous number of new shooters. Like, ridiculous. Like, every second person I talked to had just gotten their PAL and was eagerly looking forward to being able to buy handguns in Canada again. So that was awesome. So a lot of F Trudeau's. So it was a very good show. I enjoyed it greatly. Mm-hmm. Did our ORA first event of 2024 last weekend, a plinking short range practice, 15 and 100 yard day, had 26 shooters come out, which is the most I've ever had out at an event. So it was awesome. Unfortunately, I booked it the same day as our AGM. So that may make me unpopular with the rest of the executives. So I have to not do that next year. But great day, absolutely flawless weather, a little cold in the morning, and it was like 12 degrees and gorgeous and sunny by 11 o'clock. It was just beautiful. Going to be doing a 500-yard practice day for the RA, so that's kind of cool. Haven't done one of those yet, so I'm going to be setting that up for April-ish. It'll be up on the RA calendar pretty soon. And looking at working with Kelly and Rick and The Problem and a few other, and Russ, to get known distances maple seeds going at Borden. So hopefully we'll have a day in June for that, so there'll be more coming on that. So 100 to 400-yard maple seed, be cool.
Yay.
Going down to the States this weekend with Kelly for an apple seed. So I'm super excited about that. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going down with Mr. Brian. We're going to transit down because Kelly said we can't ride with her. So she's being
I did not say that.
You totally did. You're such a snob.
I said I'm leaving on Thursday.
That's true. And we're not. So, plus you're like 6 hours away from him, like way south. So yeah, Brian's just north of me. So, so I'm going to do that. So it's going to be fun. So I'm looking forward to seeing you on Friday, Kelly. It's going to be awesome hanging out for the weekend. And for that, I rebuilt my 1022. So I have a, for those listening, I'm holding it up. It's a gray birch 1022 that I use to shoot birds in the throat and shoot paper. And it's stupid accurate. So I finally put an extended charging handle on it because with this Nikon tactical scope, I keep grabbing my little tiny charging handle and then taking the side off my finger on the razor sharp side of the scope. So I finally bought myself an extended charging handle, and I bought an extended mag release, and I put I put a BX trigger on it a little while ago as well.
Can you hold that up straight, please? Just, I just want to see, no, back a little bit away from your camera. There you go. I just want to see your scope. Okay, that's all.
Yeah, it's a Nikon Rimfire Tactical, and
yeah, no.
They were getting out of them. They were selling them real cheap, so I think I got this for like 80% off or something ridiculous. It was so cheap, and it's a really accurate setup. I love this little gun. So, and I'd never gotten one of these mag releases before, and I decided to get one. Oh my god, it's so good, so good. Anyway, I'm very excited. Pretty sweet, and that's all I got.
All right, that's everyone, right? We all had a chance.
Yep.
Said our piece. So on to upcoming events. We've got a couple of them here. Kyle, do you have that one open already?
I do. Yeah.
Oh, do you want to read the upcoming three-gun matches?
Sure. How far do you want me to go?
Like 30 days.
Okay, so on April 20th, Chaz is having a three-gun match, and you can check practice score for that, C-H-A-S. If they have still have space in there. On Friday, May 3rd, the Canadian Multigun Series at Guelph Rod and Gun Club will be kicking off. Saturday, May 4th, Chaz will be having another three-gun match. Saturday, May 11th, Sherwood Park Fish and Game Association will be having a multigun. And that same day, Mighty Peace three-gun will be having their first three-gun of the year. So I think all of those except for Mighty Peace can be found on Practice Score. Mighty Peace is Peace River. Basically, find them on Facebook or just show up at before 9:30 in the morning.
Cool. Thanks.
Cool, cool.
Next up, we have Maple Seeds. Kelly, do you have that one open? Or am I doing that one?
Nope, you're doing that one because
I'm doing it. Next one's up. We've got Sherwood Park, the doubleheader coming up on the 27th and 28th of April. Lone Butte in BC is going to be the April 28th. Chaz is going to be May 11th. And then Low Butte again on May 26th. So you can register for those. Go to mapleseedrifle.com/events and find out more about those.
Yep.
I've got some PAL courses available May 12th. I'm all sold out for this weekend. But if you're looking at Edmonton, that's that. ORA CQC is on May 4th. And Precision Rifle May 5th at CFB Borden.
Find us on Practice Score.
Both of those are on Practice Score, which is where all shooting events should be.
Yeah.
They're working on a new version, eh?
Yep. Yeah, they're getting ready to send it out to beta testers, and yeah.
It's going to be less terrible because it works, but it is not intuitive and is a huge pain in the ass to set matches.
What do you pay for it?
I pay nothing, and I demand better for my money.
Well, they even have a shot timer that's out being tested for Apple Watches now too.
Yeah, it it works. I mean, it's not horrible, but they could certainly do a lot to improve it. So I'm looking.
Well, compared to other match management softwares, it's the best out there. I mean, other match,
it's terrible.
Yeah, there was something that Ipsic was using before Practice Score, and it was crap.
Well, I know like Sporting Clays, they have WinScore or the CNSCA even just made their own and absolutely horrendous. Mm-hmm. Like completely horrendous, especially coming from Practice Score where, yeah, Practice Score, like you're setting up a match and some things you, I wish you could opt in or out of certain features. But overall, like Practice Score is good. And I can only imagine that it's just going to be even better once 2.0 comes out.
Nice. Yeah. And there's something to be said about, like, at a match, once you've got all the tablets back, you can sync them, post to the website, and it'll be live for everyone in, like, a minute. Like, it's so quick to do.
Well, the way you have it right now, you can have it. So you can actually, if you have the infrastructure there with all your Wi-Fi and everything, you can have it sync up. As soon as the score is entered, it sync, and the competitor gets an email, hey, your score has been posted. You can go into the competitor app and see the live results on the competitor app as is right now.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Yeah. Cool. Let's get into the news. This first one, something from Reddit that I can't remember what he put in there. Oh, right. The CFP ATIP. So this guy did an ATIP for the CFP to find some information. This was information that they used to give away and they don't anymore. So he ATIP'd them to get it. It was like, how many calls does a month does the CFP receive? 60,000 on average per month. There are 60 call agents. There's an even split between the ones that speak English versus bilingual. The average call wait time, under 5 minutes.
BS.
Maybe that counts like when handguns got frozen, right? Anywho, that was that. How many people have their call? Oh, some more information. There was a full PDF that he shared that that if you want to find out some more information about the CFP call center statistics, they're up on Reddit and we can share that link or whatever. But anyways, I thought it was interesting. This next one I wanted to put in as a cautionary tale. Two wanted after man shot during meeting to sell gun. A 20-year-old man was shot multiple times Monday during a meetup to sell a gun. Winnipeg police said they were called at around 10 p.m. to the 500 block of Mountain Avenue for a man who had been shot. He was later found in the 1000 block of McPhillips Street and taken to hospital in stable condition. It says in stable condition, which was later upgraded to stable. So it must have been critical or something else that wasn't stable, upgraded to stable. They met via an online firearms brokerage classified website to finish a gun buy. When the victim became suspicious of the suspect's behavior and tried to leave, one of them pulled a gun and fired multiple rounds into his vehicle. Well, they didn't know there was a shootout. He brought his own gun, but it wasn't loaded.
Mm-hmm.
Should have, right?
Yep. So basically, the guy was suspicious and turns out he was right to be suspicious.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you guys sell your guns when you want to sell something on Gunpost? How do you do it? Because I have a way of doing mine that would make this not happen.
Go to the crops?
No, sorry. I process their PAL. You do the online transfer with their, and you verify their PAL. And if you verify their PAL, they're not going to be gangsters because now they've given you their PAL, right?
There's a good chance that, you have their information and everything,
Which is the way you have to do it anyway. So.
Yeah. I mean, but technically,
what did we do before that? I just always met in a public area, like at our local Tim Hortons or something.
For sure. But like before, I think like most people were selling via like Canadian Gun Nuts or something like that, something that had a trader rating for buyers and sellers.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to worry about it so much. Now with Gunpost and Townpost a little bit like taking over a little bit more, you lost that trader rating on your buyers. So that's how I verify my buyers is through their license.
Do you think that if he processed their PAL, he would have their names and everything?
I think if he processed their PAL, they either have a stolen PAL, which they could just buy guns with anyways. And not only stolen and not canceled, because if it gets processed through that online thing, it means it's been stolen or not canceled. So it's still possible. Like you could still get robbed going to one of these, but I would say the likelihood would be 1,000 times less.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm reading through the article. I'm looking at who the suspects are. Mm-hmm. And I'm just saying, well, they can't name them for one. One's a white male that was wearing a white hooded sweater, and the other was a male in his 30s wearing dark clothing and carrying a long gun. Mm-hmm. That's pretty noticeable.
But yeah, gets out of his car with a rifle pointed at you. Maybe don't sell him a gun.
Anyways. I got the wrong address.
Yeah.
I thought I'd include it because this was like a young man who was, who made a mistake in not verifying beforehand and, paid the price for it and getting shot, but not killed, which is a good thing. This next one here is so the federal government released budget 2024. It has money for a buyback, but it's not enough. This quote here I'm taking from I don't even know who this is, some blue check mark, Noe Chartier, I don't know. So the part from the federal budget that he's got is saying, yes, the federal government banned assault-style weapons in 2020. We're moving forward with a plan to buy these assault weapons from retailers and Canadians to ensure they never fall in the hands of criminals. Budget 2024 proposes to provide $30.4 million over 2 years to public safety for the buyback of assault firearms sourced from existing departmental resources. That doesn't sound like enough.
No,
that doesn't sound nearly enough.
Pay their blind bill.
I think that's just to maintain the department. That doesn't sound like they're actually doing a buyback.
No.
Doesn't to you guys? No. 30 million is not enough.
No. That's all admin.
Anything.
So no. It's for existing departmental resources. Yeah. So that's exactly it's to fund
salaries,
resources.
30 million divided by $1,000 a gun is 30,000 guns. That's not even enough to buy the ARs that are in country.
No,
and that's 2 years' time.
That's because they've got somebody pushing paperwork, doing something. It's probably the people that are out there putting out tenders to desperately try and find someone to be involved in it. That's probably their salaries. Yeah.
And 7.4 million over 5 years.
Or they will pay $1 per AR, like sporting rifle.
What a deal.
Yeah. They're getting a bargain there. So
they're not going to do anything with that buyback, honestly. They're just going to push it down the road because they need it for the next election to go, oh, the conservatives are going to let assault weapons on the streets if they get let in again. Oh, they're already, one of the emails I got from them last week actually said something about that the conservatives are trying to add guns back into our streets or something. I'm like, yeah, because Pierre Polyev's down at Jane and Finch going, hey, buddy, I need a gat. What a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
They're not doing
letting the RPGs back in country because they banned the RPGs with that OIC, right?
Yeah,
and included by name.
Some anti-aircraft systems.
Too, yeah, the conservatives are going to be letting the RPGs back out onto the street. Anywho,
if you can afford to maintain it, you should be allowed to have it.
Agreed. That's my view. You can feed it. You should be able to field it.
Getting into new gun stuff. New gun stuff is brought to you by Bullseye North. Need a new boomstick? Bullseye North is Canada's shooting superstore and a proud supporter of CCFR, with a wide selection of guns and top trending gear for any shooter. And they have 25% off Phoenix flashlights right now. Moving on to some other stuff. Oh, I should probably share my screen so I can show you guys all the goodies I've found. London Darrow has some primers for sale. And they're not that expensive. Small rifle primers, Federal premium ones, $16.99. CCI small pistol, $12. CCI small rifle bench rest, $21. Small pistol, Magnum small, no large rifle. No large rifle in there, but they got some primers anyways. This next one here, Rangeview had kind of an interesting one. I wanted to show it. They have a used Seiko TRG M10 sniper rifle deployment package, military LE test gun. So this is a pre-owned. It comes with three calibers. So it comes with 338 Lapua, 300 Win Mag, and 308, all in a kit. for the low, low price of $17,000.
That is really cool, though. That's cool.
It is really cool. Yeah.
That's government pricing right there.
No, they had to pay more. that's the used price. Practice Score V2, we mentioned already. They have a recoil shot timer for Apple Watch that's coming out as well. That's kind of neat. SFRC has the Mossberg. Am I sharing? Oh, I'm not sharing my tab. No. Let's stop. Present. And let's do this again. The whole freaking window. There we go. SFRC has the Mossberg 940 JM Pro. They only have two left. $1,479. This is the Gucci'd out version of the JM 940.
Pretty.
I don't know why. Oh, that's why I put this. Like, why did I include this one? Oh, yeah. It looks crazy.
Yeah.
Northern Elite Firearms has the Revolution Armory MP12PA Defender 12 gauge. It is a, what is this like? That
interesting
one.
Right. What's out of Terminator.
That? Interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It's out of Terminator. It's out of, what's the one where they got to get out of New York?
Escape from New York.
Escape from New York. Escape from New York. Holy
get
crap.
Get out of New York sounds more like a hip-hop gangster rap move version of the movie. Yo, Ice-T, you got to get out of New York.
Oh, look at that rib goes all the way. That rail goes all the way to the front. That's so you can put night vision on there, right?
Yeah.
Let's go with that. Yeah. Misty Mountain. So they were moving. They're back. They're so back. They got tons of new stock. You can see there, they're setting up their shelving and whatnot. Man, that looks like that Home Depot plastic shelving. They got lots of it.
In a Quinistot?
What's that?
They operating out of a Quinistot?
Quinistot? What's that? Is that a place out in Toronto?
No, they're the little shelters.
Quonset?
Quonset.
Quonset.
Looks like a Quonset.
Ukrainian fly swatter. Oh, they got a bunch of stickers and patches and stuff. Neat. Ooh, some Rhodesian brush stroke. Where's the short shorts?
Let's get Gavin on that.
Opportunity.
Yeah.
Wait. No, they have to have it, right?
Oh, they, yeah. They got
brush
it.
Stroke. Show me the short shorts. They're probably sold out. Why do you buy anything else? No one wants this other stuff. They want the short shorts.
I do.
I mean, pants are just shorts that haven't made it yet.
Oh, you got scissors.
You can do cutoffs.
I'm not doing
cutoffs at $200 cutoffs. Though.
Yeah.
Well,
you're cutting off $100 right there.
Oh, that's too much. It's too much. I'm not cutting that stuff off.
Brushstroke Daisy Dukes.
Yeah. I just picked one of these up. Cabela's has their Wild Wednesdays. They got the Sig Sauer. Romeo 5X Gen 2 red dot sight. This one doesn't have like the caps on the elevation adjusters. It's just got them open. So grab like a rim of a 9mm or a 22 or something like that and click it over. There are one MOA clicks though on this bad boy. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, don't go crazy with those clicks. And hopefully you didn't want that much precision because you're not getting it. Yeah, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, one MOA. Like, I don't mind half an MOA, but one MOA click adjustment is just.
Wow.
That's what my C79 is, and it works just fine.
Yeah, yes.
Out to a kilometer with one MOA clicks. Works great.
Sure. Yeah. And then they also have the Cabela's shooting mats on for $59. So if you're listening and you're going to go do a maple seed, go to Cabela's today or order one online and do the local pickup or whatever and grab one of their shooting mats for $59 because that's the cheapest and they're nice and big and cushy.
Yep.
Snag one using our link.
Yep.
Yeah.
You can find
it. Well, right now our link isn't working. So,
why is that?
Some affiliate network nonsense.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Anywho. Main topic time. Not this topic. We want to talk about gun shows with Mike. Right?
Okay. On that note, I'm gonna bounce. See you guys.
Me too. All right, later, Dave. I have to.
See you, Dave.
Okay. Yeah, you guys gotta go drive down to the US and you don't like Mike, so clearly you can leave.
Actually, I really like Mike. I just don't like the drive down to the US. Anyways, well,
come on, I'm driving tonight too, and I'm staying.
Yeah, you're already in the state. See you Friday, Kelly.
I will see you Friday.
Boy,
bye.
So let's get into our main topic. Mike, we wanted to get you on to talk about a little bit about the current state of shows, future of the shows, gun shows, that is, if we should continue doing what they do and all that kind of stuff. We're both on a Facebook group of people who are looking at kind of trying to create a new kind of show for Western Canada. So where do you want to start? Current shows?
I think we have to talk about the current shows and the fact that if something doesn't change, there will not be shows.
I think there's still going to be shows. So like the Stony Plain show I was at a month ago or something like that. There's lots of people there. There's lots of people showcasing kind of like garage sale stuff, right? Guns and ammo and reloading dies and old stuff and that kind of thing.
Yeah, but what was the average age of your average vendor?
Varied, but on the older side, and the customers were definitely on the older side as well, because a lot of the stuff that people are selling is stuff that collectors would want to buy. Like, ooh, here's a lever action Winchester 92 still in the box commemorative edition. Like that kind of stuff was what I see typically at events these days, right?
So you don't see a slew of Cooey 60s and Sporterized 303s?
Yeah, those two. Yeah, lots of those. Lots of lever actions.
Lever actions, ammo, optics that haven't been in production for 40 years. Mm-hmm. They took your course. They just got their PAL. If they walked into your average gun show, they're going to say, is this all there is for the Canadian gun community?
Yeah.
Because they don't know anything. And people do go to gun shows just to find out, like, I just got my PAL. What do I do?
Yeah.
There's a very, there's a lot missing from your average show is the easiest way to put it.
Well, and the prices aren't that great, a lot of stuff either. I mean, my brother got his PAL, and then I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to the gun show. He's like, oh, maybe I should go. I'm like, no, don't. And he's like, why? Maybe I'll go there and get a gun. No, you don't do that here. Yeah. He's like, but it's called a gun show.
Well, stuff missing, but then there's a bunch of stuff in there, like called a gun show, but basically half of it's an arts and crafts show.
Yeah, or you're selling blinds or window coverings or tin siding or people rings. Say beef jerky, but I believe the beef jerky serves an actual purpose. Yeah. I have no problem with the beef jerky guy being in there.
The beef jerky guy could stay. All the rest of you guys kept it.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the symptoms of a problem with the gun shows as they are right now is a lot of people go there, walk around, look at stuff, and don't buy anything. They'll just leave, right? Because they didn't see anything worth buying, which is kind of a funny thing. Because I think if I go to if I go to Cabela's, I'll find something interesting that I might want to buy. But I go to a gun show and very easily walk. Like the last time the one I was at there, I walked around. The only thing I got was some really specialty 303 stuff that I could get online, but the shipping prices would just kill me. So buying from this show was worth it for that. But the last three shows that I've been to, I didn't buy anything from them.
I don't think I bought anything at a gun show in probably 4 years.
Yeah. Well, and you've probably been going to a bunch of, have you been like manning CCFR booths? Like what's your exposure been at gun shows recently?
I helped plan a couple of shows. I've sat at tables for either CCFR as a field officer, or I've went with, we did a booth trying to promote PRS because some people just haven't heard of it or know it's a thing.
Cool. Yeah.
And I don't see anything that interests me really. Like you can only look at the same thing so many times.
PRS would be interesting. A while back, I think we ran like a three gun table that was part of, that would have been a while back. And maybe my memory is like not working on me, but I'm pretty sure we ran like a, here's everything about three gun that you can do at Chaz, by the way, get a membership kind of a thing. Right. I think we did that at one point.
And I think that the shooting sports needs to step up and like, we need to send somebody to a show to bring in new people. because otherwise absolutely. It's going to die.
And the clubs do the same thing. Like, you get the sports to do it, but then the clubs. So we were talking about that with Wapiti getting a booth just to show what is all there and what happens there throughout the year. There's a lot of people don't know.
No, there's such an information gap. I don't even wouldn't compare it to the States, that we're 8 years behind the States. It's that we are so big and so lessly smaller population that the information is not actually traveling in between. You know what I'm saying? Like, people just don't know that there are options out there. It's just, you go hunting and that's it. There's no sports shooting. There's no competition. There's no courses.
Well, I think, and part of that is there's still a mentality that you got to kind of hide in the shadows because you don't want too much publicity, because that's just going to bring attention and shut us down. But then people don't find out. So you don't renew your membership. You don't build your membership to make it actually something that stands out and says, hey, we got a ton of people that do this.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't really get that. And just like in my PAL courses, almost all the people getting their PAL are because they want to hunt.
And initially that's how I started out, is, oh, I just want to go hunting. And now I realized you can only hunt 2 months out of the year, really, for us. What are you going to do the other? Yeah. What are you doing in the other 10 months out of the year? You may as well do some sort of practice for it.
Or something. Yeah. If you enjoy shooting, like hunting is the, you take one shot in the whole year, depending on how many tags you got, and that's it. And don't put your gun away. That box of 20 rounds is good for 20 years.
Yeah.
I the amount of targets I've seen at our range where it's like a pie plate and the group is like this. I'm like, please don't hunt something. You're just going to
make it close. Make sure it's close, real close.
like if I'm at the range, they're not like that. I'm disappointed.
Which you should be, right? Okay, so yeah, you talked a little bit about, like, I guess, like, identifying that there's a problem there. Have you seen like attendance drop on the? I have no idea what attendance numbers look like right now at gun shows. I know that at that Stony Plain one I went to, the Saturday was pretty busy. The Sunday was not, and it wasn't like a standing room only or anything like that.
No, for our show that we held in January, we're the first one of the year, we were getting like 2,200 people, I think, roughly around that area over 2 days. Mm-hmm. Smaller shows, I've seen 800, which I was honestly surprised they got that many people, but it was a bit closer to the city, so had a few more people come out. But they're being well attended. It's I want to say almost up to the organizers, but if the organizers aren't really interested in bringing new stuff in, that's going to be the biggest gatekeeping that we're going to see.
Well, that, so there's something to be said about that. Trying to get a table at some of these shows can actually be quite hard, because there's a standard, like there's a bunch of people who just run the gun show circuit, and they'll attend like all the gun shows with their table of whatever kind of knickknacks or whatever they're selling. So it can be quite hard to get a table. Like, it was hard for me to get a table at that Edmonton one. Calgary one's hard to get a table, because it's these, like multiple event, showcasers or, you know, garage sailors who are taking tables at a lot of these things.
And it's such a big garage sale mentality too, because at the end of the day, it's a fundraiser for 99% of the people that are doing this. So, yeah. They just want to sell tables, and they know that certain guys will show up. And those certain guys will always say, like, we see when some of our vendor supplies, oh, I have to be beside this person because that's where I was last year.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to break in, unless someone kicks the bucket and it's such a good friends club, you're not going to get prime real estate for the first couple of years anyways. As a new vendor, that's going to be hard to swallow if you're kind of shoved in the back corner when you want prime real estate.
Well, and that's come down to the organizers too. Like, you can't be given preference to everybody. Like, I'm just thinking, like, I mean, even SHOT Show, you pay for like the bigger booths, but I mean, you don't get to choose your spot. Like,
to a certain degree, no, I think.
Yeah. Like, you're like in the one venue, like all the small guys, I'm pretty sure for the majority of those people like that, they bought a booth of that size and then they got put there. Yeah, your big guys like Smith & Wesson, Benelli, those guys, yeah, they probably get a little bit more say, but they're paying big dollars for that. But
and they're putting on the display to go with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're the floor space that they're taking up is massive compared to the other guys.
I looked at the pricing. It was insane for SHOT Show what they pay for a booth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like industry trade show pricing. I think it's probably like 10 grand, right?
Oh, I would love to know the millions of dollars of deals that are signed at SHOT Show.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be in the hundreds of millions.
Yeah.
But that's, especially when you have all the defense contractors there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like a industry trade show, right? So, SHOT Show is for industry insiders to attend. Would you be saying to do this like this, whatever you would want in Western Canada? Would you want something that's industry insiders only, or would you want like common people to be able to go to this thing too?
I would say you need both there.
Yeah,
because not only smaller. Business owners, they might not care about SHOT, want to go to SHOT, but for them to run to Calgary for the weekend, it's okay, we'll go to the mountains, whatever. That's not as bad as go to Vegas and everything's twice as expensive anyways, and there's tons of people. And so that's one option. The other thing is the public can actually talk to the manufacturers themselves.
Yeah.
Because that goes with the information thing. We want to educate people. We want to engage people, and then exchange would be kind of the three E's of what a show should be, in my opinion.
So what kind of tables would you like to see at a gun show?
I like to see in for this proposed show that people have talked about in Calgary, you have your manufacturers that have their nice trade show level booths, but at the same time, in say one hall over, you can still have people that want to just bring in their 20-30 rifles, throw them on a tablecloth, say, this is what I got. I don't have an issue with them coming, but I think it would be good for the whole kind of community as a whole if there's a lot more cross-pollination in between what's going on. It's because guys would think, I wish there was something that would do this. And then you walk over and you see a manufacturer that has the exact thing you wanted, but you didn't know existed. Now you've made a connection and say if it's a new some manufacturer, they can bring their products right to the people, answer all the questions. And then if there was enough people there, say, we have a dealer here. Go to booth XYZ. You can walk out the door with one.
Retail. So have some retail presence so that people can buy stuff right then and there. New stuff.
Yeah. New and used, have both. Because then you're going to draw more crowd too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it'd be cool. Like Richard's mentioning that he's saying all the trade shows he's exhibited at first come first serve. And I think that would be a mistake because I would rather have all the people who have like a table of guns that they're selling in one spot. Cause if I want to look at a used gun and I want to find like a Winchester 94, I want to look at all the ones in the gun shop. I hate having to, there's one in this corner. There's three over there. There's two in the hall over. Like having a little bit more planned out locations of like on a per product basis would be nice because it would just make it easier. Put all the ammo guys in one spot, put all the dyes in one spot. It'll allow for easier cross comparison. And it might allow, I need a Winchester 94, but I'm looking for something in a name weird cartridge. This guy over here has got one of those. It would make it a lot easier for that.
For sure. And with that, it's just like, if you're going to sign up to be an exhibitor, you pay for this size of booth. No, we don't know. We can't tell you where it is. When it comes to set up, we will direct you where your booth is set up. And then you can control that. You can have, this is our MilSERP section. This is new. This is competition. This is hunting.
Jerky.
Yeah.
No, jerky's got to go right in the middle.
It's yeah. Well, yeah. Right dead center.
And on that too, it would be nice to have a couple of speakers that have some actual knowledge that they could give to the community too. Like have a little corner, have a stage, have five people come up, do a 30-minute talk, answer questions, take pictures.
Well, I think like doing meet and greets and little like speeches, like a little stage area for speeches or mini seminars. I think that would be a great draw for something like that.
The question is, who do you get and how do you get them?
Well, okay. So you want,
I would say prioritize like Canadian. So, I mean, like I'm pretty sure you could get guys like Jim Shockey to come out to something like that.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Might have to pay for it.
Might
pay for it to have a guy like that out there, which, you know, cuts into the profit margin of your show.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of that, the top guys, you're going to have to, but it may cut into it. But on the same token, if you are able to advertise, hey, we got Jim Shockey coming to talk about this, or I don't know, I'm having trouble pulling names off the top of my head, but just to have a list of these, whether they're pro shooters or they have TV shows or like, you know, so we'll call them gun celebrities there, that could actually increase your profit because, yeah, you might have to pay them to be there and do their thing, but the draw on getting people out, that might be enough to draw someone there.
Man, we should have had Richard on. He's got all these numbers. He's saying in Las Vegas, it's 21,000 for 600 square feet just for the floor space. In Toronto, you're looking like 10K Canadian for 450 square feet.
Okay.
I think Calgary would be substantially cheaper than, I'd hope that Calgary would be substantially cheaper than Toronto.
Maybe the other thing is venue. Where do you hold something that big? If it's as big as we want it to be, where does it go?
Saddle Dome, which then you're paying. Like if you're in Calgary, that's pretty much the place. And the thing is with the Saddle Dome, there are so many different buildings there that you might be able to find a cheaper building there to do something. But I guess there's actually a fair number of places in Calgary. I'm just trying to think. BMO
Center. Tony's mentioning BMO Center. Yeah.
But even Northlands in Edmonton.
Yeah.
That'd be a similar size venue, what you need. But
Maybe like Edmonton Expo Center would do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the Bell Center or Telecenter in Calgary as well, I think.
And that's all great, but you go to them, say, we want to have a gun show. They're going to say, no, it's not part of our views or something. I could see that.
Maybe. It's entirely possible. Well, a lot of businesses, you know, as long as the color of your money is green, they don't really care.
Yeah.
It just gets interesting because when you have a gun show where it's a garage sale, you often have guys just walking in with random rifles.
Yeah. They sell
to other people. Yeah. And that's fine when you're in the show, but when you're trying to get into the venue, there are sometimes issues with that.
And when you buy the gun and the guy walks out with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fine in Edmonton. No one cares. There's people bringing guns out and, you know, back and forth between this thing. And there it's normal, but it might be harder to do downtown Calgary.
Yeah. Have the variety of what's available change substantially, because I think that's our biggest issue. Because eventually the old guys that are all running this circuit, there's a huge amount of knowledge there. I don't want to kick those guys out. Was it when the Roman Empire fell for 60 years, we forgot how to make concrete or something? There's a knowledge there that we don't really want to lose. But at the same time, if they're the only ones putting on the shows, the only ones vending at the shows, and generally 50% of the people that attend the shows, there's not going to be shows left in 20, 30 years.
Well, no.
Like, not enough people are going to say, I'm just going to go get a table at the show that weekend, when you could just rip and sell everything on Gunpost or take it to an auction.
I think a big thing is getting, like you're saying, getting the manufacturers out there to display the new stuff, because a gun show right now, that's not happening. It's literally a garage sale. And having the dealers there is fine and everything. I know I get disappointed because it's a garage show and arts and crafts show, and there's not even any deals to be had.
Yeah,
you know, if there well, was
at least a, when there's if, at least when there's new retailers with new stuff, they can have like a 5% off or so, like a small bargain just to save on it, and I think that's fine, and I think that's an okay way of the only stuff I would ever buy is like, oh, they got the powder I need and it's right in front of me. Okay, cool. Yeah.
Hey, from what I've been seeing, the only innovative stuff, like new innovative stuff, has been cheap Chinese crap that answered a question that hasn't been asked.
Sometimes I'm making that with 3D printing.
I like the idea of having like more of your, I guess, TATCOM/SHOT Show style, where you get your manufacturers out there and really push to have even your smaller, especially the Canadian manufacturers, get the innovative stuff out there, and then the big manufacturers that people can walk up and hold, like this new gun we just released this year. Yeah, we're not selling it here, but you can hold it and decide if that's something you want to go to that dealer over there and place an order, or they might have one there that they're going to sell you right now.
Yeah, and we would want to highlight Canadian companies over everything.
Mm-hmm. Because I know there's some really high-end stuff being made in Canada. Like you look at MDT, KDEX, IBI. We were mentioned talking on the pre-show, Alberta Tactical, although they're kind of in flux right now. But, we got some good Canadian manufacturers. But, besides those, I know there's other stuff that's being made, and innovative stuff that's being made in Canada that doesn't get highlighted or isn't known about.
And to that point, if we'd have to make something where the manufacturers are going to say, if I'm going to go to this show, there's moving expenses, there's flights, there's travel. What's my rate of return for showing up to a show like this?
Yeah. Well, here's a prime example. And okay, I'm not in the PRS world, but I didn't know about Pristine until I went down to SHOT Show.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not in the PRS world, but I'm still in the gun world. And I didn't have a clue on Pristine or who they were or what they did until I went down to SHOT Show. And it turns out that they make some of the best receivers out there.
Where are they based?
Chilliwack, where everyone else is based.
Chilliwack is what's the big gun manufacturing state? Insert.
You got either Wyoming or Utah, basically, I think.
We'll call it our Utah then. Who just picked up a hockey team, apparently.
Yeah. Well, Salt Lake has a little bit more snow than Phoenix, so they might sell a few more tickets.
Yeah, you lose the snowbird crowd.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anything else to mention?
No, that's pretty much all I can think of right now. It's just if we as the community don't come together and do something, there's not going to be something in the future. We kind of got to get proactive about it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the organizers need to vet the entrance a lot better. I've made the comment in the past because, right, like Angel was saying, right now they just don't care. Oh, you're going to pay me money? Okay, yeah, set up a booth for basically whatever.
Have a minimum standard for what's acceptable as a booth. Doesn't cost much to throw a couple nice tablecloths down. Little banner or something. At least look like you're trying.
Cool. Okay, let's get on to the rest of the show. Kyle, do you want to take this first email? Because I think he's got a couple of questions that I have to answer, so I don't want to read them and answer them at the same time.
Okay, sure. Hi, everyone. I really enjoy the show. I am a CFSC instructor in Manitoba, and I have a question regarding how you run the hands-on portion of a PAL class. I have heard more than once on the show that you will always have a minimum one gun per person for the course. I was wondering how the logistics of this work. During my classes, I have an 8-foot table at the front/side of the room with 5 guns on it. I typically do hands-on with the students 3 different times during class. The first time, they do axe and prove on each action. This is done with 2 students at the table at a time. The second time, they load and unload each action type, again with 2 students at the table at a time. The third time, they do a mock range exercise with 3 students at the table at the time. I have found that when students start their hands-on, that having more than 2 at a time is far too much for me to watch for muzzle and trigger control. And if someone is struggling, I'll have to walk them through the process. I was wondering how you set up the room to have at least 1 gun for each student and how you effectively supervise them and catch their mistakes. Also wondering how the practical exams work. For example, If you have two or three different bolt actions for practice, then just use one of them during the exam. Is it possible that the student hasn't handled that particular firearm? Thanks for your time. Keep up the great work, Joe.
Yeah. So I've got, I don't know if they're 6 or 8 foot, but 3 guns per table, which so a lot of tables, cause you need a lot of space for this kind of thing. Again, typically I'm running more instructors as well. So, at 12, I'm trying to run 2 instructors. So we've got 2 eyes on what people are up to. Let's see here. The style of what you're doing, axe improve, and then load and unload, and then mock range exercise. Like, yeah, that's all entirely possible. And you can have them have hands-on with all guns in between all of those, or like through those 3 exercises. Again, 15 guns, 12 students. If they've got to do axe improve on each action, load and unload each action, and then do a mock range exercise, you're getting pretty close to them having hands-on with all those guns. And then kind of towards the end of the practical, like the practice, I do have time where they can spend as much time as possible with any of the guns that they haven't handled. I try not to have too much unique action. So there should be actions. Like I've got 2 Winchester Wildcats, for example, and then 1 Ruger PC carbine. So I try to keep that stuff a little bit more similar. The shotguns, the action release is going to be in a different spot, but they're going to work the same way. The break actions, they're all the same that I have. So there's no difference there. But if you think about you're doing them with 2 at a time, I'm doing them with 12 at a time, 12 at a time, 12 at a time for each one of those. So they're getting a lot more hands-on with the guns and a lot more time per person. With the risk, yeah, of course, that you've mentioned that they might get a gun that, oh, maybe they only loaded it and unloaded it once instead of, you know. Although I think, like, max you're going to be able to get is load and unload once anyways with that setup. So, yeah. Yeah, 2 or 3 different bolt actions for practice and just use one of them. Yeah, I've got 2 303s. Well, 3 303s when one of them has like a bit of a different safety, but this is pretty similar to the Enfield safety, right? Like it rocks back on this side and the other one rocks back on the other side. Practically the same thing. You wouldn't want to have 12 completely different firearms that are all weird and wacky that they have to then try to figure out and remember and that kind of thing, because that would hurt with recall.
Yeah.
I guess there's two different like schools of thought there too, right? Do you want to have 3 kits that are all using the same guns so that you like you're not giving people too much to remember, or do you want to have 3 kits with a little bit of variation so they can see a little bit of like, oh, this is what a safety looks like. Oh, that's that must be the magazine release, so they can start identifying it, right?
So you had mentioned usually you have another instructor with you. So for the hands-on portion, how many people do you have at a table hands-on per instructor?
I have, 12, like 12 students.
You're saying 12 students. Instructor.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're just spanning your attention wider.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm looking primarily for muzzle control. Muzzle control is what we're looking for. All the guns I don't have, like my lever actions that I've got, you don't need to use the half cock safety because they have a separate manual safety. So I say, just use that. Let's just not, you don't need to touch the trigger on any of the guns for any reason on the non-restricted. So let's just not do that. So I'm watching for muzzle control, making sure that they're doing that correctly. I show how to load and unload on each different action type. People still make a mistake on it. And there's some like frequent flyers on people having trouble. The lever actions, like, okay, close the action and then load the tube. And same thing with the pumps, close the action and then load the tube. So if it's got a tube magazine, close the action, load the tube. Don't try to have it half open or something like that. You're going to jam it up and, you know, I'm going to have to pull out my my D-jammer to scoop that dummy round out of there. But yeah, and then on the practical exams, yeah, there might be 2 or 3 kits that, so far 2 kits is what I've been running, and I've been trying to use the easiest guns to use in the practical so that I'm not adding extra, you know, stress to the students.
Right.
Cool. All right. I'll take the next one here. Good evening, Slamfire Radio. After a week in Adriel Town, lots of things at home needed attention. So it's a short one this week again. I'm going to have a second trigger upgrade for the Kodiak K9 soon. Since Kodiak won't get back to me, I'll be slapping an ARPCC trigger in there as they cannot be reached to be consulted. My best wishes to Mo and let us remember his silhouette with Italian pistol in hand, blazing through an IPSC course. Hope to see him on the show as a guest soon. I was thinking we could play Bella Ciao for him, but I found the lyrics refers to ladies. I will await Mo's answer on if it's appropriate from an Italian perspective. The song is known in the Chinese culture for its modified version, Goodbye Friend, in the 1969 Yugo movie, The Bridge, translated to Chinese in 1977. Okay, interesting facts there. USPSC match this Saturday, this is the 13th at the BTSA. See you there. It will be my first pistol IPSC style match. We'll report back next week. And we have the report back. Kyle, do you want to read that one?
Sure. Good evening, Slamfire Radio. Ooh, it's an email doubleheader. On Saturday, I shot my first IPSC/USPSA style pistol match with a borrowed Polymer 80 G17 from Foothills Firearms Training Dave. And boy, was I not expecting so many issues from the world's most popular pistol platform. First of all, shout out to Lou, who recognized me from the show. He is a new shooter to action pistol and was shooting a Norinco P226. Now to the issue log. Number one, a Glock clone actually does not fit in a Glock holster, but I have an Omnivore, so that's not a huge deal. Dave warned me ahead of time, saying the Glock OEM magazines would work best, but being a Magpul fanboy and not wanting to drop his mags in the mud, spring condition is awful, I took out my fleet of Magpul 10 rounders I used previously with my Kel-Tec Sub 2K. Before the match began, I did a 10-round test fire, and the pistol worked great. Stage 1. Right as I was about to complete my first reload, the RO commanded stop. I thought to myself, as I was clearing the pistol, that was a quick way to end the day. Did I have my finger in the trigger guard when I was reloading? Turns out one of the popper activators did not work, so I had to reshoot the stage. Fortunately, there was no safety violations from my side. Quite a way to start your first pistol match, I would have to say. Shot a few USPSA classifiers and did all right in my opinion. I was shooting into high Ds of production, and I think I can make C-class in the long run. Then came the long stages, and the P80 turned into a straight pull bolt action. Hmm. From what I can tell, the pistol will often fail to extract at 10 plus 1. After lunch, I caved and pulled out the Glock OEM magazines, knowing they have less spring tension when loaded to 10, but that did not fix the issue. Instead, I was getting magazine drops when firing after a reload. A classic mistake, I thought. Had a lot of fun shooting action pistol, but ended the day slightly frustrated. Upon further investigations, I found that the OEM Glock mags do not lock in very well in the P80 at 10 plus 1, and my reloads on the clock were likely not the issue. Please see attached. And he did send a video. I watched it, but yeah. At this day and age, beggars can't be choosers in Canada, but I'm still surprised that the P80 performed poorly despite being very popular in the U.S., I guess I truly am breaks everything he touches, Tony of Calgary.
Should have stayed with the 1911.
Yeah.
Just keep your finger off the disassembly lever.
That sounds rough.
Yeah. Yeah, that does sound rough. I was seeing if I could download the video and play it.
I haven't heard there's much problems with those polymer 80s. I really haven't.
No?
No,
I wonder if it's
you could buy them here too. There are some in Canada. I think Saskatoon, there's a shop in Saskatoon that was just bringing in crates in before the ban.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a thing. Yeah.
I would have a look at the mag, see if you can slightly move, if it is riveted and not basically a single stack mag in a double stack body. See if you can move that slightly and just get a little bit more movement on that 10th round. Cause it sounds like, yeah, it's just like with rifle mags right now, I'll strip off a couple, because a completely full on a closed bolt, you really got to hammer it home to get it to seat. So just see a little bit of movement in there. Other than that, I mean, it's tough.
It's a borrowed gun too, so there's only so much mods you could put onto it.
I mean, cool. Another thing is you could, if it was your gun, you could just, your mag catch, you could just start filing in there, so it doesn't have to be so, mag doesn't have to be quite so high to catch the mag.
If it's a 10 plus one issue, I think I would tend to shaving the follower wherever it hits on the pin, so that it gets me, like, the mag is probably at like 10 when it should be like 10.4 rounds capacity.
Well, it should be like 10.7, 10.8. Not 11 rounds.
Not 11, but close to it. So you got that room.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Let's get on to YouTube and look at some of the comments there. I got it open. I'll do these today. 4 hours ago, Tony was mentioning, what was the scoring for USPSA multi-gun, and how would hit factor scoring change the landscape?
So USPSA multi-gun traditionally was two anywhere. So you got your paper, and I'll just use the paper as example, because that's what the hit factor relates to. So you have one in the A or two anywhere on paper, and then a stage is 100 points, period. 100% is 100 points with hit factor. So it would change it, because now, just like IPSC, you got to be more accurate, because now you got your 5 points for your Alpha, 3 points for your Charlie, 1 point for your Delta. So not only does it slow up the shooting, require you to be more accurate, which is fine. It completely changes how you shoot it. One is it doesn't make it any easier, because one's a game of speed, and one's, okay, you still have to get speed, but most points per second, basically. So you got to shoot it more accurately. It also slows down your reset, because when I do USPSA multi-gun, I walk up and, there's two. It's done. Even building the match, USPSA multi-gun, I take the tablet and I basically enter how many stages and make sure that all the penalties are there. I can build a match in practice score in pretty much 1 minute.
Yeah.
Versus with hit factor, now you have to have all your paper there. Now you have to count all your steel as well and count all that stuff. So now something I would do in less than a minute now takes half an hour if your bays are all right, nice and tight.
And when you're calling out the scores and scoring the targets, you have to be like two alpha
Charlie. The real kicker with this one is, at the same time they did the rule change where they would allow you to use hit factor for USPSA multi-gun, the problem they were trying to fix, they had it set so that by numbers of 25, you could set custom points for stages. So when you got your short stage, you could say that, this is a 25 point stage or a 50 point stage, not a 100 point stage. Mm-hmm. They did that at the exact same time, because that was one thing last year with Nationals that they got feedback on, was because they had some basically do or die stages in the match, and people didn't like that. So that's why they did all this. So that's the thing. At the same time, they had it so that you can make a stage, still have the same match, same style of shooting, approach it the same way, but with closer, better spread of the points awarded. But then they decided to completely change the game and go hit factor.
Yeah, when they could have just said, points is fastest shooter on the stage. That's how many points it is.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with hit factor. I like how multi-gun is that speed race, and then I'll go shoot USPSA or IPSC for, I still want to be fast, but now I really got to tighten up my accuracy on this.
Mm-hmm. But. Yep. Cool. Gustavo mentions, thanks for having me, guys. Had a great time. Wolf mentions, a bolt action or break action is easy to pull the bolt and look down the bore every time. If my semi rifle is on a rack and falls over, I'd run a rod down the barrel just to make sure. But I agree, running a cleaning rod at the range introduces a mechanism for introducing contamination So unless I have a reason to be suspicious, I'm not taking my cleaning rod out to the range, but it's always with me if I need it. That's from the what they don't teach you in the PAL course. Eddie's mentioning, Kyle, that's disappointing. You can't have your firearm on you while archery hunting in New Mexico, but there are many good hunting states nearby. Texas isn't far from you.
Yeah. Texas is expensive, though, because it's all private, so pay for ranch access. And I should clarify, if I'm archery hunting in anything other than just archery only season, yeah, I can have a handgun on me or whatever. It's just through archery season.
Got it.
But, yeah.
Eddie's mentioning Mo quit the show. April 1st was a few days ago.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's all, I think we got all the other ones here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got us caught up. Yeah.
Cool. If you want to comment, comment on Instagram, Facebook, Discord, YouTube, any of those things, or just send us an email, slamfireradio@gmail.com. Our Cabela's link is not going to be working right now, so I'm still working with them to get that fixed. Stay tuned on that. Thanks to our supporters on Patreon and Player. Shoutouts?
I don't have a shoutout, but I'll just redo my recommendation from what I did in Guns and check out With Winning in Mind.
Very nice. I have something a little bit lower brow. Watch the Gyrojet video with Brandon Herrera because it's funny. Mike, any shout outs?
Yeah. As of now, no, not really. It's early in the year. We'll have time for shout outs later.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Join our Discord server. There's a link to it from our website and all that kind of stuff. Watch us on Facebook, YouTube, Player. Join the CCFR. And we'll see you next week. Bye, everyone.
See you next week.
Thanks. See ya.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.